Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota reached 1,000 new COVID-19 cases twice in October so far. The odds that you personally know someone with a confirmed case have therefore increased. Well, what do we know about this virus that we didn't know before? When should you go to the hospital during a bout with a deadly disease? And are you concerned about hospital capacity? What can we do to fight back the latest virus surge? Dr. David Basil is Vice President for Clinical Quality with Avera Medical Group, and he joins me for our weekly COVID-19 update. Dr. Basil, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
I want to start with this this concept of just keeping people safe and keeping them from being infected as it relates to this week. So two things. It's Halloween coming up on the weekend, and people are making decisions about what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And then I went to Target this Saturday for some groceries, and that parking lot was packed. And as I looked around, there was definitely some Christmas shoppers in that crowd. So let's start with Halloween. How strict do we have to be? What kind of choices should we be making, and why?
Yeah, that's still somewhat of an individualized decision, and not necessarily an easy one. And so you do kind of have to weigh the risk of that quite a bit. I mean, obviously the safest thing is not to go into, you know, any groups anywhere where you're going to be potentially exposed. But if that's not the right answer for you, then do as much as you can. Consider, you know, wearing masks when you're out. Also, there's still the concern isn't as high as it used to be as far as COVID being on surfaces, but there still is some possibility of COVID being able to live on, say, candy or something like that. And so I know at our house, we're thinking about putting some candy in a big basket and putting it there a day ahead of time, and then just putting the basket out on our porch in case we do get any trick-or-treaters that come around. That way, we're at least not being exposed face-to-face that way, and hopefully people use the honor system and don't empty us out in the first half hour.
You know, I understand that we all have these choices to make, but I think, you know, part of what we are trying to get at is this idea of, you know, to make a choice about your personal risk, you need to understand, you know, where those choke points are. So sanitize your candy. If you take your kids around in the neighborhood and they knock on a door and someone gives them their candy, do you sanitize it when you get home?
I think it's kind of like the same thing about groceries. Early on, we really were kind of thinking about, you know, is it the right thing to do to wipe off all your groceries before you put them away at home? And the CDC has come out recently and kind of said, you know, that probably that step isn't necessarily needed because it doesn't seem to stay on surfaces, or at least be viable on surfaces, nearly as much as we thought it might be. It's still, this is a respiratory spread virus a lot more than it is a contact one. And so in my personal opinion, if I'm not going to wipe off my groceries, I'm not necessarily going to wipe off my candy. I think the risk is probably higher when you're face-to-face at that door that you would get it at that situation than be getting it from the candy, unless those are rare situations if somebody just coughed on the candy or something. If you were worried, another option, you know, maybe put it away for a day or so, and that would lessen the risk of that as well.
Okay, so let's go back to that exchange, because early on in the pandemic, we talked about takeout in a similar way, which was really the real moment here that it's at risk, is that moment where you're face-to-face with someone. The very nature of Halloween door-to-door trick-or-treating is that you are going to be face-to-face with lots of people, strangers who you don't know what their condition is. They might not know whether they're sick or not. Talk a little bit about making choices about even, you know, walking up and knocking on someone's door during a pandemic.
Yeah, that is the point of risk. And it's all about strength of the exposure and length of the exposure. And so the conventional wisdom for the last several months has been 6 feet for 15 minutes. And you say, well, I'm certainly not going to be at somebody's front door for 15 minutes, so it doesn't sound like it's a big deal. But then the CDC has kind of changed its guidance recently, pointing out the fact that it's more the cumulative exposure during a day. And so if you're exposed to three different people for 5 minutes at a time that we're all positive, and that's going to be just the same as one person for 15 minutes straight. And so it's that repeated exposure to perhaps several people that would be positive and not know it yet. That could be the real getcha. And so that's why we're going to, certainly if with my children, I've got school-aged children, I can, again, this is an individualized choice, but I can tell you what I'm doing with our family is we probably won't be doing traditional door-to-door this year. We may go to, you know, a couple close friends' house that we know that are kind of doing something similar and putting something outside of their door. We might, depending on the weather, have an outdoor get-together with one or two other families that we can stay pretty socially distanced from and try to do so safely. And so we're kind of modifying our plans this year is what we're doing.
Yeah. We are hearing, you know, if any, I think everybody's hearing, I can safely say if you have Facebook or social media of any kind, you are hearing from people who are ill, people who are in healthcare and are exhausted from dealing with patients. And I don't mean exhausted from dealing with patients, but they're working very, very hard to keep up with the people who are coming into the hospital with COVID-19. What can you tell us about do we need field hospitals now? Are we looking at some of those scenarios that we were planning for in March?
I would say we're not at the point of talking seriously in the near future about field hospitals. I would say it's still somewhere, you know, 20 to 30% of the patients in our hospitals are COVID-related patients right now. And so it's not like everybody in the hospital has COVID. Now, as that number goes up, it depends on what else is coming. Hopefully we don't have an early flu season this year because that would be incredibly bad combination to have to handle both of those at the same time. What we're seeing is we're still able to handle the volume right now. We're not comfortably handling it because the numbers, there is no doubt they continue to escalate week by week. We're seeing higher numbers and having to figure out ways to open up more beds and to staff more beds at our facilities, but so far we've been able to accommodate that. The biggest concern is the staffing concern. If we started losing staffing, that's almost a bigger concern to us rather than space. If our staff start coming down with COVID, which they generally don't get it from caring for COVID patients, we get it just like other businesses do, either, you know, in places like break rooms, lunch rooms, or at home socially is where most of our employees get exposed if they're going to come down with it. And so that's a bigger concern. It's more, rather than physical space, it's staff resources.
For people who are ill and who are concerned about going into the hospital and are waiting until the absolute last minute because they think there isn't a capacity or because they know the staff is exhausted and they're concerned that if an ICU nurse is taking care of three patients instead of one, which might have been the case before this surge, they are concerned about the level of care they're going to get. So my question to you very specifically in that context is, when do you go to the hospital? When do you know that you need to go to the hospital? And can it be can you wait too long?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most disturbing trends we've seen throughout this pandemic from the very beginning is people that were not items that are not related to COVID putting off that necessary care and often putting it off too long. What, a couple examples, you know, we've had a big shift in how heart attacks present for us. We used to, you know, have a pretty good public campaign where the public knew the first sign of any chest pain, come in and get checked out because time is heart muscle. And so if we get you early on at that first sign, we can get those vessels opened back up and not have a compromised heart later on. Now we're seeing a lot more of a shift where people are coming in 2 or 3 days later and they've got a completed heart attack and there's not too much we can do because they already have tissue that has died and started to scar. And so there's, even when we restore blood flow, we can't do as much there. Similarly with strokes, we were on a pretty good pace for the last several years of people coming in at the first signs of weakness or numbness. And now we're seeing a trend to them coming in later. And, you know, we can't reopen the vessels the same way and save the brain tissue that way. And so that's been a big shift. Similarly, we've seen immunization rates in children and adults going down, and cancer prevention screenings like mammographies and colonoscopies going down. And so we're really worried about, you know, cancer rates going up and other infectious disease coming up because immunization rates are drawing. And so to answer your question, when you should you come in, by and large, I would say similar to before the pandemic. If it was important enough then, it's still important enough and needs to be addressed. Now, if it's more minor, if you've got a migraine, maybe the ED isn't the place to come because the ED is likely to be busy. Maybe try your primary care physician or urgent care. Some of those shifts are always welcome. But if there's any question that it might be something serious or emergent, sooner rather than later is still the answer.
Yeah. Can you answer that same question for COVID-19? When do you know that your supportive care at home and this feels awful, but I need to write it out? And when do you know that, like, the place for me is the hospital? And can you wait too long for that trip?
Yeah, that's one of the things that early on we were really worried about, how fast people might go downhill with COVID. It does seem like it's a little bit slower onset of some of the respiratory symptoms and things. And so it's not at all common that we see somebody diagnose them with COVID and 5 days later is when they get really sick and end up needing to be hospitalized and stuff. And so we work really hard on getting them plugged in. If mild cases, with at least phone calls, more severe cases, we get some of our virtual video visits going with them so that the affected individuals have somebody that they can reach out to with questions or concerns. We send a lot of the sicker patients home with fingerstick oxygen saturation monitors so that we can tell when their breathing isn't working very well based off of that, and have them tell us to give them a call when it's getting into the low 90s so that we know to evaluate them further. And it still is. It's mainly the respiratory situation where most people get in trouble with COVID. And so it's how much work of breathing are you having? How much difficulty of breathing are you having? And then the oxygen saturation. Those are the things that we really watch the most for.
Mm-hmm. Are we having a problem with running out of tests or the ability to process those tests? What do you know about that?
So from a supply chain standpoint, we're keeping a pretty adequate supply of tests. From a processing standpoint, the mandate from on the national scale, which I totally understand, to test all nursing home staff up to twice a week is added literally thousands of tests a week to be run. And so that has put a definite strain on the system. And it's a worthwhile strain because it can be so devastating in a nursing home if COVID starts to spread through there, and it's probably the highest risk area that we have. But those added number of tests do continue to put a little bit of a strain in the overall testing turnaround time. We've continued to, you know, every couple of weeks we take a step forward, increasing our capacity to do the number of tests. It's probably 5 to 10 times higher number of tests that we can run today than we could run earlier in the pandemic. And so we keep increasing that. We also just opened up a new testing location here in Sioux Falls out on 23rd in Minnesota that increases our capacity, the number of people that we can get through there at one time. And that's greatly reduced our wait time almost nothing. And so that's another barrier that we're trying to reduce so that people are comfortable getting in. So my overall answer to that question is, if you think you may have symptoms consistent with COVID, give either your primary care physician or the COVID hotline 877-AT-AVERA a call. And if appropriately, we want to get you tested, because that's the key to getting this under control long term, is catching as many people as we can as early in the disease process as we can, and reduce the number of people that individual passes it on to from that point on. And so that's the key to this, is get tested early and even with mild symptoms.
Mm-hmm. What do we know about immunity after you have recovered from COVID-19? Have there been new studies indicating any clarity on that topic?
I would say not anything earth-shattering. We still think, by and large, you know, 90, 99% of the time, once you get COVID, we think you're protected at least for some period of time. We don't see a disturbing number of people that potentially have gotten reinfected. There's maybe a few proven cases in the nation, but it seems like it's a pretty rare event. I do think we see a lot more people that kind of get reactivation of symptoms. There's a definite kind of prolonged post-COVID symptoms that you can have and that can kind of come and go. And so I think we see a lot more of that than true reinfection. So for the most part, we do think that you're somewhat protected, at least during the short term, once you've had it.
And how about spreading to others? If you've already had it and you're recovered, now you've got a negative test, you're clear, can you go, you know, can you walk around without a mask on, be close to people? What do we know?
Yep, that does seem to be pretty consistent as well, that about 10 days after you turn positive, most people do stop shedding or stop being infectious to other individuals. If you have certain immune problems or take some certain immune medications, that can push out to more like 20 days. But for most people, 95% of people, it's going to be 10 days after that. You can pretty safely assume that they're not contagious anymore. They still may test positive intermittently because your body's still going to be getting rid of detectable fragments of virus, but it's not a virus that we don't think that you can infect others with. And so, yeah, that's good news.
Before I let you go, I want to give you an opportunity to speak to nurses and care providers within the Avera system who might be exhausted, who are worried when they see the numbers of 1,000 people. I think there's more than 500 new cases reported today. I haven't looked closely at the site, who are losing patients, which takes a toll on an ICU provider as well, and who are worried that we're not doing enough to slow this spread. Talk to them for a minute, and what would you say to those nurses and care providers?
Yeah, that's a great topic, actually, and it's a topic that we actually have at my household quite a bit. My wife is a pulmonary and critical care physician, managing a lot of these patients in the intensive care unit, and so we talk about kind of how's morale holding up on the units and everything. Caregivers, by and large, we got into this for this particular reason, to help others. And part of it is when we started, we thought this was going to be a sprint, and it's turning into this marathon of every day and seeing the numbers continue to go up. And we do think that the numbers are going to stay high for you know, at least several weeks to months more. And so I guess what I'd like to say to them is, hang in there. You are appreciated. You are doing incredibly important things day in, day out. You're having an impact, probably as big of an impact as you're going to have at any point in your career. And we will get through this. We'll get through this together, and we will get through to the other side. So hang in there and take it one day at a time.
Dr. David Basil is Vice President for Clinical Quality with Avera Medical Group. Dr. Basil, thank you for being here with us today and answering our questions. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.